Red Sonja, Circle Jerks, and the Return of Bruno. It's Grab Bag Month, apparently, this week on Tom and Hank Talk About the 80s.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Hank.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Hank.
How's life going?
Oh, well, boy. It took 6 hours for us to get the microphone hooked up today correctly since
Not my fault.
Had Goober the monkey do it, which is me.
Which is you. I usually set up by myself, which I will next time.
Yeah, thank God.
How's things? How's the planning of this episode going for us?
It's going pretty good. We just decided today to do it.
Yeah.
And we had no theme, no idea, and no time. And
but there were reasons for this. We had a theme. Yes. It just fell through. We weren't able to do it.
Laziness.
And so now we didn't know if we were going to be able to record, but you know what? We are.
To be honest, I'm tired of facts. I'm tired of looking up facts. So from here on out, I am making shit up as I go along.
We got that covered. We know exactly how to do that already. As I make every noise possible.
Are those
possible.
Marbles going? Did you bring marbles to the...
I brought that glass vase of marbles.
To the program tonight?
To the program. The Academy Award nominations came out.
Oh, great.
I am not prepared at all to talk about
that. I saw that movie, The Favorite. It's got a lot of...
Yes.
I'm going to say misplaced enthusiasm. It's a boring, boring, boring film.
Okay, so Amy went on my recommendation, even though I have not and will not see the film.
I would not recommend that film to anyone.
But there wasn't really anything else out like a couple weeks ago. And I said, oh, go see this. She's like, I have a day. I don't have the kids. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and see a movie. And I was like, oh, I don't think there's much out, but why don't you go see this? And then she wrote back, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be a comedy. And so I laughed at the inappropriate scenes because I thought they were supposed to be funny, but then you realize there's nothing funny about this movie at all. It's sad. It's boring. The acting is phenomenal. The costumes are phenomenal. I mean, everyone who was in it did an unbelievable job in terms of acting. The screenwriting, not so good. The plot eluded me. I was like, this isn't a David Lynch film, but I feel like I'm supposed to know what's going on.
But I think that's kind of the theme of this, right? It is very odd. It's a very odd piece.
It is. And I would say that it's about 5% a comedy and about 95% very, very awkward, hastily shot, maybe on film. Seemed like it was filmed in the 70s, so it's very grainy and very high contrast visuals with very poor cinematography or uninteresting cinematography, I should say, and a lot of handheld camera, half of it filmed with a fisheye wide-angle lens.
Really?
And so it's very disorienting and... And when you get to the end, you think, well, okay, it's a comedy. It's supposed to, it just has this super, super elusive meaning to the end of the film. And you're like, what the fuck? What the fuck? And Megan actually yelled out into the theater, what the fuck kind of ending was that? I was like, shh, babe. She's like, no, what the fuck was that? And everybody in the theater was probably thinking, yeah, what the fuck was that? So anyway.
It was nominated for Best Picture, I believe.
Okay.
I know it was Best Actress, nominated for Best Actress for Olivia Colman.
She's great, whoever that is.
And she's great, right?
Because they're all great.
So she's the queen.
She's the queen, yeah.
And she is...
I'll tell you, I saw more There is more vomiting into vases and buckets in this film than any film I have seen in the last 25 years combined.
Ew.
It seems that every 20 minutes someone is throwing up into a bucket, and you can see the throw up.
So there's a meaning assigned to this.
I don't know what the meaning of it was. First of all, they don't even tell you, they tell you nothing. You don't get a little white text at the bottom that says England 1618. You get nothing. You know, you do not know who these people are. You know that one is a queen. You know that there's some guys with wigs and makeup. You guess it's about the 1700s. There's a wagon. That's as far as I got.
Well,
there's a lot of sores.
Ew.
And a lot of very, very, very awkward lesbian sex. Okay. I say awkward because I don't think probably in real normal life it's awkward at all. But in the film, it's incredibly awkward.
And, well, I'm probably not going to see it.
So that's my review. Watch for it at your coming up Academy Awards.
All three actresses got nominations.
They're all great.
So?
If not, they're all great. Oh, great. They really are. There's no doubt about that. For sure. I mean, that's what kept me watching. Otherwise, I was like, can I just bury my head in the popcorn and be dead?
Or throw up in it?
I would rather have eaten vomit corn. Yeah. Throw up corn.
Okay, so switching gears.
That's my soundboard. This thing has really been a good investment. You know what?
It's paid off. I didn't think so at the beginning, but it's really paid off. I was pretty angry at the beginning. Okay, so you sent me a link this afternoon as I was coming over here to set up. And I was, like, busy, and I was trying to get out of my house, and I had my AirPods on, and I was like, fine, I'll click it. I don't really have time to watch 11 minutes. So I stuck it in my pocket. Mm-hmm. And about 3 minutes into this video that you sent me, like, who this person is comes out.
Yes.
And so you sent me this video, and it is, I want to tell you what it was called, because I want people to be able to look it up. And so on YouTube, you can look up that moment I opened up about suicide.
Yes.
And it features an actor talking about this. I want you to explain a little more, but his name is Ahmed Best.
Yeah, he is the actor who played the part of Jar Jar Binks in the Star Wars prequels. And there's, you know, Star Wars is a huge part of my family from my upbringing, my childhood. My sister and dad and niece and nephew are all crazy about it. And we've been having this ongoing conversation about Star Wars and canon and the universe and the actors and just the films since 1977. We've been having these conversations. They are ongoing. They are ever lasting conversations, speculation, theories, things like that, and trivia and things. And, you know, we've always really made fun of, as a lot of people, most people that I know, the character of Jar Jar Binks and how annoying Jar Jar Binks is, and that I think he's just like one step below like Ewoks on the ladder. And
And we've made fun here on podcast.
Yeah. And, you know, like him or not, right? It's just a character, right? But here's what I learned from this video. And this video popped up last week. I think it came out on January 9th. So it's brand new. And it said, you know, when I opened up about suicide, and it said I played Jar Jar Binks. And I was like, is this real? Like, is this a joke? And I was like, well, you know. And so I clicked on and I started watching, and sure enough, it's this actor, and he's talking about, I won't tell the whole story because you need to watch it, you need to hear his words and his experience, but he's talking about when he was 24 years old, being in a show and having the casting director for the prequels there in the audience, and he's approached and they say, we want you for this part in the new Star Wars. And he's like, holy shit, like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to be in a Star Wars film. Like, this is huge. A young black actor looking for work and finding this huge, huge, huge major breakthrough in my career and in my life. And he goes and they're talking about the technology and the CGI and how they did it and how he was like in this cutting edge of this sort of new way of shooting CGI and incorporating it with live actors and how exciting it was and how just unbelievable it was for him. Like, I'm going to be in this Star Wars movie, you know, I just can't believe it. And then his whole experience of being the actor and learning and just being part of it. And there's George Lucas and like, oh my God, I'm part of this huge cultural, you know, thing that's happening in the world and has been happening. And I just like, what a break. And then the film comes out and then the tone immediately changes from him just talking about his positive experience and like being part of this thing to suddenly being the recipient of tons and tons and tons of hatred from all walks of life, all different colors of people, you know, bullying him and threatening him and saying, you know, he's a traitor and that he's a stereotype and he's like, I was just this kid from New York. I just wanted to be in this movie and he talks about this time where he's on the Brooklyn Bridge and he's looking out at the Brooklyn Bridge and he's like, he had it. He couldn't take any more hatred. He couldn't absorb any more hatred and he hated himself and that he was this played in this thing that he was so excited about and he decides that he's going to fucking jump and he's going to end his life. And just then a gust of wind comes up, a very strong gust of wind, and it knocks him off balance and he almost falls, but he catches himself. From there, he tells the story about being on the bridge with 20 years later with his son and a photograph he takes. And it really moved me personally with my own, you know, temptations to suicide in hard times in my life. And I realized that by him telling his story that he was not a CGI character that's to be made fun of, that he was a real person underneath there. He was a real human being with aspirations and ambitions and excitement and a genuine love for what he was doing and putting all he could into this thing. And suddenly I looked and I was like, that's a real guy under there. That's not like a puppet or
never thought of
a green screen.
Yep. Never thought about this kid Fool. Who did this role ever. You know, yeah. I was part of it. I'm sitting here crying because it is so powerful. And it's powerful to think of what like a mob mentality can do to someone. And no one thought of this poor kid. No one ever thought of the kid himself. Yes, exactly. They thought that they hated this character. And me too. Yeah. And we've made fun of him. We still do. And we will continue, right? It's part of our thing.
I probably was up until about 3 hours ago. And I was like, you know what?
I'm done. Right? Oops. And it's just like, so to, and then, you know, he'll, please watch because you need to say, but I do want to say, kind of a spoiler alert, I guess, but like he says, he knew right then at that moment that he didn't want to do that because he grabbed.
Yeah.
He grabbed onto the bridge so he wouldn't, reached out. And because he reached out, he knew that this wasn't meant to happen.
It's just remarkable. And, you know, that he says, you know, I shared the story because no one knew that about me. This is a real thing that happened to me. And I'm like, God, you know, we worship, you know, Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, you know, Anthony Daniel, we worship all of these characters so much. And this one, and the actors, we worship the actors too, you know, oh God, the Carrie Fisher, you know, the world fucking was in so much pain when she died because we love, that's Princess Leia, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, he's like, I thought if I jumped, no one would care. And not one person would care. And I shared my story because there I was sitting on the bridge with my son 20 years later, the very bridge that I almost jumped off of. And I went to that spot and I was with my son and we took a picture together. And he's like, I posted the picture and suddenly I got all this support. And all the support that was there that I didn't know was there because I never told anyone. I never told anyone what happened to me. And I was like, fuck, we all need to tell our stories. And I know a lot of people that struggle with depression. And we've talked about it before on the show, struggle with depression and feelings of suicide. And to be perfectly honest, I've been there many times myself. And so, you know, I have shared my stories with some people and I felt like it was really brave of him. And then, you know what I thought? Why didn't he fucking play Lando? Why didn't he play? Why haven't they invited this guy back to play a huge role, like the role of Finn? Like this, he's obviously an actor. Like, oh my God, give him redemption that he deserves. And so, George Lucas, if you're out there listening, and I know you are.
I know you are.
Give him the Star Wars experience that he deserved, because that did not happen to any other actor in the Star Wars films ever. That did not happen to them.
It's interesting, you know, he's just 4 years younger than we are. Mm-hmm. Please watch it. His name is Ahmed Best, and he works. He still works. He still, you know, he does small projects here and there, which is great. And once again, the name of the video is "That Moment I Opened Up About Suicide" on YouTube. And it's worth a watch. It really. He's got such a good presence. He's very well spoken, and he's a good storyteller.
Yeah,
you know, he can really emote what he is feeling in a very real way.
I also think, and not to get too far into it, but I also can't help that it almost backs up this suspicion, this bad feeling about CGI that I've had since it became so prominent in films, which is, why not have it be a real actor? If you're gonna go through the steps, why have a Snoke? Why have a Gollum? Why have these characters that are real people moving their bodies, but fake heads? And if that guy had been, if Ahmed had been a real character with his actual face and maybe makeup, I would have been so quick to jump on him and be like, oh no, Jar Jar Binks sucks. You know, fucking hate Jar Jar Binks. And I was like, it's because you don't, you don't see a real person. You see a goofy, a goofy thing. And it's easy for us. And if you're going to go through all the effort of having an actor, let it be an actor. Let them put their makeup on if they want, but let them be a person. And I realized, like, Jar Jar Binks isn't really a person. It's just this, you know, like, I believe Luke Skywalker exists in a universe. I believe Princess Leia Organa exists somewhere in a universe. Whereas Jar Jar Binks, I'm like, no, he's just one of those dumb CGI things. And so let that be a lesson to Hollywood, to like, we have real people. Let's use real people.
I'm going to tag George Lucas on the
I'll get a cease and desist order, please.
Or we may see a really fantastic movie starring Ahmed Best.
Yeah, it would be great. So anyway, yes, please watch it, and please watch it if you're down and you're not feeling good and you need something to help buoy you, because he shared that story because you need to hear it. I needed to hear it, and I needed to hear it today. So there you have it.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I like I said, I put it in my pocket and just let it play as I was walking over here. So I was listening all the way, and I made a point to stop and turn it up so I could really hear it when I was outside. And then I came up here, and it was on my phone, so I just kind of set it on its side and put it on your bookcase over there, and then just like sat here and just like bald.
Yeah, he's very engaging speaker. Yeah,
he really is.
Yeah.
He really is. So, you know, we say it a lot, and I'm happy to say it again. Please call the National Suicide Hotline if you feel the need to. Reach out to a friend. On the other side, reach out to a friend who you think might need reaching out to. And then go to psychologytoday.com, enter your zip code in the place where it says search for a therapist, and you can search for a therapist. They'll give them, they'll list them in your area.
Yep. Do it.
Do it. And so now we'll, do you have anything else to talk about?
Like that was really it. Like that just kind of popped up. No, I talked about the movie that I love so much. And,
well, I am rewatching, 30 Rock again from the beginning. And, you know, man, once you get past those first like six, which are still great,
yes,
but then they really start getting into the weird thing that it becomes. It's just so worth a watch.
I've been watching Gilmore Girls with Megan. Yeah.
Well, A, I'm so excited. B, I feel like you're cheating on me, though, because it's like I'm the one. I do feel a little bit betrayed because I'm the one who wanted someone to fucking watch Gilmore Girls with me for the past 2 decades, and no one will.
She got Netflix just so she could watch it. She's watched probably all like 5,000 episodes.
Yeah. Wait until, oh my God. They're so good. We'll just have to do a fast forward of a Gilmore Girls episode. All right. So I don't know. Yeah. 30 Rock. It's really a highlight.
All right. Anyway.
That's it. Okay. So we're grab bagging it.
Yeah.
Because how fun. It really is fun.
Admit it. You all love it.
You all love it. By the way, thank you for feedback. Thank you for Facebook messages. Thank you for Instagram messages. Thank you for all of that. It's fun. And thank you so much.
And thank you for the generous cash donation. And
you know what? You can just make that check out to Chicago All Saints Hospital and just use the initials.
All Saints Children's Hospital.
Cachet. All right. So one thing that I just want to hit upon, and that is in the 80s, there was a little phenomenon of, and I know it happens now, but in a special way, it was a phenomenon of television actors putting out music, making an album.
Yeah.
And I...
bless them.
Bless them. I would say that probably the biggest out of all of them was Eddie Murphy's Party All the Time from 1985. Am I right?
I mean, it's a pretty good song. Even the lyrics are questionable, but the music, I'm like, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. So he put out an album and it was very,
let me just ask, do you think he was on cocaine when he recorded that album?
Yeah. I think everyone in the vicinity of Los Angeles was on cocaine when he recorded this. I'm going to have to say yes.
Ding, 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 ding.
Party
ding.
All the time. So in 1985, okay, you ready? Mm-hmm. This is the best part of it. So in 1985, he put out his album, and it was called How Could It Be?
I mean,
here's my question. How could it be that eight songs, the album is eight songs, and it's 35 minutes? It's like an album of jingles.
The record company's like, you know what? We are putting out way too much for the amount of money that we're making. Let's do a half album and get the same amount.
We're Sony Music. We hardly have anything.
Hell, we're selling CDs for $29.95 right now. They cost 10 cents to make.
In the cardboard box. Yeah,
with the plastic on the outside.
And people were like, I think this is too much. Like, this is a lot of cardboard. Because they had to be tall in order to stand up in the racks because they were made for albums.
Yes. And they had to be side by side. to fill that 12 inches. They're 6 inches each with the keeper cases on them.
Now that we're talking about it, I'm very sure that we've talked about this before.
We have. But it was probably, you know what? We're just going to redo the first like 10 episodes slowly.
I mean, basically. That's all right. So Eddie Murphy came out and it was just like, it was a fun...
Yeah.
A fun party tune.
It was.
My girl wants to party all the time.
But he has that particular voice, you know?
He does. He has Eddie Murphy's speaking voice. That's what he has.
It's not his Art Carney one, though, but it's his other one.
And he goes a little Michael Jackson, a little Michael Jackson up on there every once in a while, but it's a lot of talk singing, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then
tinging,
we had talk singing. That took me a minute. Then we had Bruce Willis. Right, just say, like, when Eddie Murphy puts this out, he has had Saturday Night Live. He's had the comedy special Raw. And, oh no, maybe he hasn't by that point. Anyway, maybe. But he has had Beverly Hills Cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he is riding high. He is.
In so many ways.
In so many ways. And so he's really on top of the world. And so then another celebrity who put out is Bruce Willis, who is moonlighting is the thing, right?
Oh, God. You know, we haven't really talked much about moonlighting.
No, I don't think we have at all. And we have to do a whole thing because it was big for me. It was a big thing. So remembering the story off the top of my head, because I didn't think about talking about this until literally we were about to press record. So I don't have much info flying by the seat of my pants. So Bruce Willis's album was called The Return of Bruno. And Bruno was the name that he went by when he was a bouncer in New York City before he made it big on moonlighting.
Uh-huh.
And so, so
was it like, it was like blues rock? Like
it was, blues rock. Yeah. It was respect yourself. And there was a lot of harmonica, like real like blues rock. And funny enough, it wasn't a huge hit.
I can see the album cover. He's like this with his arms folded.
Girl, you are right.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay, so then two more that I want to mention quickly because they were on soaps that my family watched. So it was Michael Damian from The Young and the Restless and Jack Wagner from, I believe, General Hospital.
Yeah.
And they both had big.
Was Jack Wagner, was that All I Need Is a Miracle? What was his?
His was, okay, ready?
Yeah.
I think we've talked about this before, but now it's in context. His song was, ready? I'm going to lean back.
I need
is just a little more time.
Yeah.
That one. Okay, so that is the song that I said, oh, look, Jack Wagner, when we were in the back of a Lyft and we started to hear.
Oh, my God, really?
And that accident happened, that like pileup happened next to
that
us.
That was scary.
That was the Jack Wagner song was playing. So now it has a certain trauma to it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Not to mention it's a horrible song. I mean, just the trauma from the song itself is.
And then
is
Michael
plenty.
Damian. I can't even remember Michael Damian. Sorry, I wasn't prepped. But look at
that. Well, and then, I guess Rick Springfield.
Oh, was, yeah. Yeah,
he,
yeah, yeah.
He counts in there, right? I mean, well, we've talked about him before, too. But.
Yeah, but so wait. Did we? Have we? Oh, we talked about Jesse's Girl.
Yeah.
But he made that record, I think, before he was on the soap.
Okay.
I think. Okay. But it just kind of came out at the same time.
You know, something I wanted to mention really quick while we're on the subject is, I was at my favorite record store the other day, my favorite vintage book record store.
Yeah.
Rocket Reuse. And, I was in there the other day, and they said, hey, a customer came in and told us that you mentioned us on your podcast. And they came in. and they told us that you listened to that they listened to this podcast, and it, they were like, it's Tom and his friend, and they were very excited. So Rocket Reuse, you guys are awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
Rocket Reuse, Alameda, California.
And new listener, awesome. I hope you found some good stuff there because it is a very cool shop.
Yeah, that's I love that.
But sorry, really quick.
Yes.
They have there in their 45 racks right now a picture sleeve of Jack Wagner's 45. Yeah, and it's him going like this. It looks, I think he's smelling his armpit. I think he's like sniffing his armpit and he has like a black cutoff.
It was a real big pose. Wasn't that basically the George Michael face pose?
And the Annie Lennox fist grab. double over backwards fist grab.
Lots of arm action happening. Lots of arms akimbo. So Michael Damian's song was Rock On.
Don't know it.
Oh, I think it was a remake of like a 60s song. Huh? Rock On. Hey, girl, rock and roll. That's not the word. Oh, really?
I don't know.
Maybe not. Maybe it just sounded like that.
There's going to be a lot of speculation in this episode.
Yeah, because we didn't look. I looked a lot of stuff up coming up. This was seat of my pants.
I couldn't even figure out how to plug the microphones in. So
it was rough.
We're lucky. Hopefully, this is recording.
I think we should take a. I think we should take a hummus and pretzel break. Re-energize a little bit.
Just keep recording. People don't mind chewing noises. They love that. Soundboard.
Would you like to talk about?
I just wanted to mention, because we're on the subject of music, and I don't know, will I make every grab bag that I choose have something to do with music? It's very likely. I'm just going to cover every subgenre from the 80s until I am completely tapped
out.
How
many other subgenres are there?
A dozen.
Even
at
dozen.
Least. At least. A baker's dozen. There's 13.
Why don't you start talking, because I briefly
mentioned in our last grab bag episode about being a skateboarder and being into punk rock. And then I was like, God, punk rock is another one I've never really spoken much about, but that I did listen to. And I still do love punk rock.
Punk rocked out.
Punk rock and skateboarding were hand in hand, because in Santa Cruz, where I grew up, it is a skateboarding surfing town. You know, surfers listen to punk and reggae. Skateboarders listen to punk and new wave. That's just kind of how it broke down into factions when I was a young teeny bopper in the 80s. And punk rock to me tied in to new wave. Naturally it did, and of course naturally it does. But I remember in 1982 or 1983, there was a store on Pacific Avenue in the what formerly called the Pacific Garden Mall, which is now just called downtown
Santa Cruz.
But there was a store that sold punk rock and new wave stuff. It was called Triad. There's no mention of Triad on the internet that I can find.
Really?
In several years of looking it up, thinking maybe there's something now, maybe there's something now. Triad was one of these stores that had the mannequins in the window with like mohawks and leather jackets with studs and wearing, pink, Devo glasses, and they sold buttons. You could get all your music buttons, The Cure, The Smiths, Joy Division, New Order. You could get all those, little buttons that you wear on your jacket stuff. And so they had everything. They had bandanas, and they had everything. Well, they also had a rack of T-shirts there where you could buy band shirts. And I remember not even having heard them before. I wanted this Clash T-shirt really bad. And it was a cool T-shirt. I still remember it. It was Army green. Duh, because I loved everything Army. And then it had, like, the stars and bars symbol that you see, like, on the side of a World War II airplane. It had that symbol on the front. And in the middle, it said The Clash. And I was like, oh, God. Oh, I really want that shirt so bad. Oh, my God. And my parents got it for me. And I remember wearing it to school and being like, I'm so cool. The Clash, man, The Clash are just the best. And I remember my dad saying, The Clash, you're so cool. And have you ever heard of the Sex Pistols? And I was like,
Dad?
No. I would not listen to music called the Sex Pistols. What does that even mean?
Oh, poor I didn't know Tommy.
Yet in 1983 that I would come to love The Clash. And I have a whole record shelf over here full of Clash albums and Clash 45s.
Did anyone ever call you out? Like,
no.
No one ever did?
No. No one ever called me out. But right after that, I got into breakdancing in like 1984. So, you know, I went through a whole progression of stuff. I went from like normal kid that grows up in Scotts Valley to being like into punk, to being into breakdancing, to being into new wave, to being into mod, to being into rave, and then back into vintage and 60s and that kind of 40s and 50s. Anyhow, so punk rock was a big part of my life, and I finally got to know The Clash and love them to death. But then I started, you know, I started listening to other kinds of punk rock. And I may have mentioned once before that there were these old barns about a quarter mile from my best friend Robbie's house that were in a field. And these were old-time barns, probably built in the maybe, they were very old, decrepit barns. So probably like 20s into the 40s. That's, you know, very, very, very old, white, wash-painted barns. And we broke into one time. And we broke into one, and it turned out to be a squat house for these street punks, for these, well, they didn't call them that then, squatters, they called them back then. And my friend Robbie found a stack of cassettes, and he stole one. And it was a mixtape. It was a mixed cassette that said punk on it, and that was all that it said. A little black Memorex tape, handwritten punk on the side. And it was full, it was like this treasure chest of music on a 90-minute cassette that just completely expanded my mind musically at 14 years old. And I learned about Bauhaus from this cassette. I learned about Tones on Tail from this cassette, and an offshoot of Bauhaus. I learned about a band called 7 Seconds, an American punk band called 7 Seconds that was very political music, very positive punk rock music with a very strong political and uplifting message. And things like the Dead Kennedys and the Circle Jerks and the Descendants. And I learned about all this cool music from this cassette that we had. And I ended up stealing it from Robbie. And I had it until, who knows, until probably the early 90s, I had that cassette in my possession and I would listen to it all the time. Agent Orange was another band that was on there that I learned about. The problem was there was no track listing. And so I didn't know who the bands were until I met Mike. And I used to take the bus with Mike in high school. And when I met Mike, I was like, hey, you know a lot about music. That's the guy that brought into my life the Cramps and Metallica and bands like that. And I said, put this into your Walkman, into your yellow sports Walkman, and tell me if you can identify any of these bands. And he was like, oh, this is Christian Death. This is Agent Orange. He knew all of the freaking bands. And so that's how I was able to get the names of this. I knew the songs by heart, but I had no idea who they were.
Wow.
And so it was cool to like learn about that. And to this day, I listen to punk rock. And now I have all those albums. Now I've gone out and found all the albums that were on this cassette. And The Vandals was another one that I loved, a Southern California band that does a great song about the Pirates ride at Disneyland. If you've ever listened to The Vandals, you need to check out the Pirate's Life song because it's great. They take LSD and they go onto the pirate ride and they think that the ride is real and the pirates are chasing after them. And if you're a Disney fan and if you're a punk rock fan and you have not heard this song, I'm saying go find the Peace Through Anarchy album right now and listen to Pirate's Life because it's great. So anyway, yeah, punk rock. It was a huge, obviously, it came out of England in 1976, 77. The members of Joy Division, Ian Curtis and Peter Hook and Bernard Sumner were at the very first big Sex Pistols show in England where they were inspired to start making music as well as 1,000 other bands in, you know, that came out in around 1977. And of course, in the United States, we had bands like the Ramones and you know, Iggy Pop and things like that, that were making their own sort of breed of punk rock music. And then it all just, bam, it all just hit each other and it splintered into these other types of music, hardcore and Southern California hardcore and straight edge music and all these different things. To me, it was just punk. I just wanted to hear the punk music. I just wanted to hear the aggressive, loud, screaming, super rhythmic, super, super fast music.
Well, I think it's interesting to think about the just the reach that punk had.
Yeah.
And like especially like in the 80s, like 82, 83, I'm going to try and look it up. But I clearly remember a CBS Evening News.
Oh.
I'm very sure it was CBS. You know, did an in-depth like 10-minute thing on the punk scene in New York City.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, you were introduced to these characters, you know, and once again, it's like to kind of look at British punk and British punks and then look at American punks. It's a different thing. It was a little more, you know, like striving to be like the Brits, right?
Yes, especially in Little Santa Cruz. You know, Little Santa Cruz in the 80s was, there were real punks there, and I wanted to be one, but I was too different. I liked wearing fedoras and things like that, and I didn't quite, you know, I wasn't quite a punk, but I listened to the music, and I really looked, I looked up to the punkers. I loved how they looked. I loved their mohawks and their chains on their jackets and their leather jackets and their boots and their torn up jeans. I loved it, and I wanted to be part of it, but I was younger than a lot of them. And on my first day of high school, I was opening my locker, and this guy came up to me, this punk guy came up to me, and he's like, "I remember you." And I looked at him and I was like, "Oh, I don't remember you," but I did remember him. He was a weirdo that I saw at the roller rink one day that cornered me and was being real passive aggressive and strange. And so he said, "No, I remember you." And I said, "Oh, I don't think we've ever met." And he said, "No, I remember that I hate your fucking guts." And that was my very first day of high school, my very, 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 very first day. And being the young, unskilled person that I was, I responded out of fear, saying, "Get the fuck away from me. Get the fuck away from me." And from that moment on until... from 1984 until 1991, this boy stalked me. He stalked me everywhere I went. And he was one of these punk rockers. And I looked up to these guys so much. And he had it out for me. Every time I saw him, he would try to start a fight. He spit in my face one time in front of a bunch of people. He knocked my scooter over. He called me names. He would grab me. He had to be held back several times from completely going off and attacking me. He hated me with a passion. And in about 1995 or 96, I was working at Logos in Santa Cruz at the record store, and he walked through the front door one day. And I looked at him and I was like, "Oh my God." Like, I would be at the bus stop, right? And I wore my fedora I was talking about. And he would come up from behind, he would grab my fedora off and he would throw it at his friends. And they would play monkey in the middle with me. And I would go to get the hat and the other guy would throw it. And it was just this torment that I experienced from these people that I really, really wanted to be a part of and I really looked up to. It was very difficult for me. And being impressionable and coming from kind of a violent family life, I didn't take shit from people. And it got me in trouble a lot. At any rate, here he comes walking through the door. His name was Keith. I won't say his last name. And I looked at him and my heart just sank. I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe he's walking into the place that I work. Now he knows where I work. It's been, you know, 3 or 4 years since I've seen this guy." And he came up to the desk and he looked at me, and I was helping some customers at the register, and he waited for me just like he used to, waited for me to be done. And I was like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Is he going to take a gun out and kill me? Is he going to attack me? Is he going to pull me over the counter and stab me? Like, what is about to happen? And he came up and he said hello in a very quiet, reserved voice. And I was like, hi, Keith. And I said, it's been a long time. He's like, it has been a long time. He's like, well, I want you to know something. I didn't expect to see you, but I want you to know something. And I was like, all right. And he said, I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry for what I did to you. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I've been a recovering heroin addict since I was 13 years old. And when I first met you is when I first started using heroin at 14 in high school. And most of those times that I saw you, I was high or had been high and coming down and crashing. And I was abused and I went through foster homes and I turned to heroin to escape. And you didn't deserve any of that stuff and it wasn't your fault. And I know there's nothing I can do about it, but I'm very, very sorry. And I've turned my life around and I'm trying to have a family and trying to get my life together now. And the last I heard of him, he had done that.
Good.
The last I heard of him, he had got through whatever it was. But that was the second time in my life that it happened to me from a person that was in the punk scene. And so, Keith, I hope you're doing good out there. Good. And thanks for apologizing because that was really fucked up. But it just all went away after that. I carried that angst and that fear around with me for a very, very long time. And it just all went away. It just all dissolved because he took accountability. So that's the power of punk rock. I know some people will be like, punk rock has to be hardcore and you have to be G.G. Allin and eat your own shit and stab yourself in the face or it's not real. But there's other kinds of punk rock out there that do bring people together. I love the music and I always have. And it's probably at this point, I can't believe the music's as old as it is now.
I know.
You know, it was new back then. And so anyway, punk rock. I wanted to mention it and how important it was in my life and why I still listen to it.
I am. Thanks for telling that story.
Sure.
That's a good story. I do want to say that at the beginning of you talking about your punk rock, I kept looking at you and having like a very, I'm sure, odd smile because I was really trying not to laugh because I was so happy because your hair length right now is allowing your gray to grow out.
Yes.
And you have three distinct lines of gray. One on the...
part.
On your part, on your right-hand side. And then the other, and it goes up beautifully.
I look a little bit like the guy from the Fantastic Four. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, or just like a rich cartoon guy. Because, like Richie Rich's dad. Because then at your temples, you have swaths of gray going back, and not gray, silver.
It is.
It's silver. It's white. And you look like a cartoon rich guy. And it made me so happy. You look really good.
Everyone seems to really like it. My girlfriend loves it.
Yeah, because everyone thinks you have the money.
Well, if they only knew. Once again, send donations, cash donations to Tom and Hank's Children's Hospital.
Oh, boy. I would like to talk about a wonderful actress and personality and her career a little bit in the 80s, and her marriage. And so I would like to talk about Brigitte Nielsen.
Oh, yes.
And Sylvester Stallone. But he's just a side note. It's really her show. So I became really obsessed with her, and I wanted to, like, be her. I thought that she was the coolest thing. So she was in... I think the second Conan movie, mm-hmm. as Red Sonja, I believe that's where it kind of hatched, right? Then the next summer after that, they released Red Sonja in the Conan world. And it was her, and she's very tall.
Very.
She's described as Amazonian. She's very tall and proportionate and a force.
Yes.
To be reckoned with. And she always had, and I think she still does, platinum blonde hair that is short. It's always been short. You know, it's gone longer.
She looks exactly like Dolph Lundgren.
She does.
She imagine Dolph Lundgren with...
like curvier.
Curvy.
Oh, Dolph. And so... So Brigitte Nielsen is Danish. She's an actress, model, singer. And then in the past 15 years, reality TV star.
Great.
Personality. So she began her career in the early 80s with Helmut Newton.
Oh, yeah.
The photographer,
right,
Helmut Newton.
Right, yeah.
Who she would be right up his alley, right?
Yeah.
Like statuesque, very tall and beautiful. And then in 1985, she acted in Red Sonja and Rocky IV.
Mm-hmm.
Where
the
she...
return of Red Sonja. Rocky versus...
Wait, is Rocky IV versus... the Dolph Lundgren one?
I think it is.
Oh, because she's his girlfriend.
That's what I meant. She looks like Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, gosh.
I must break you. That's better than
we
your...
We gotta do Rocky movies.
I know, we should.
My Jeff Bridges? Hey, man.
Hey
man. What's going on, man? Shout out to my mom and dad, man.
What's up, Tron?
So...
Greetings, program.
They...
Sorry. I was trying to think of his tagline.
So... She married Sylvester Stallone in a, like, epic big wedding and, you know, unfortunately it didn't last.
I'm shocked.
It did not last. So,
it lasted as long as the lifts in his shoes.
When they, he's just real tiny, isn't he? When they were married, throughout their marriage, they made a movie from 1986 called Cobra.
Everyone remember Cobra? Everyone?
And please, please, I will say the name of another podcast again. Please go to How Did This Get Made and listen to their live Cobra cast.
Is that the one where he's got the gun on the front?
Uh-huh.
And yeah, he's the sunglasses.
And it's the stories that they tell on this podcast are so good about how, like, Sylvester Stallone wrote the screenplay, but it was a book. And he said, well, maybe when we release the book again for the movie, we should just put my name as the author.
We should just put my name.
So that is, listen to that, because that Cobra episode is great. And it's with Brian Posehn, I think, who's really into that type of stuff. He's a great stand-up. So then in... 1987, Beverly Hills Cop 2 came out.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the bad guy.
Yeah.
And she wore an all white, like 80s business suit with a huge white, gorgeous white overcoat that would, like, when she walked, you know, would flow and would flap in the wind.
Like the back of my hair right now.
Like the back of your hair. And she, and then with white sunglasses, you know, and she was just all in white with her stark white hair. And she was, I became obsessed with her.
Oh, yeah.
I'll rewatch that right now only to watch her. She's so just...
I wish we could get away with doing a commentary for
a film.
I mean,
I think we can.
Not while it's playing.
Why not?
I don't know.
Others do.
Okay. Others, come speak to us. How do we make this happen?
How do we make this? This is our second podcast. How do we make this happen? They became like tabloid.
Yeah.
You know, they were on the cover of every tabloid every week.
And in each... Never mind.
I'm so glad you... I don't even know what you're going to say, and I'm glad you stopped.
It's best if I just stop sometimes.
So she, in the 90s, like, built a career of just doing, like, really bad B-movies and hosting TV shows here and overseas as well in Europe. And in 2008, well, in 2005, she had she and I think it was called The Surreal Life. I believe it was a, like a VH1 where they put these celebrities together. I don't, it may not have been called that, but it was her and Flavor Flav.
Wow.
And in 2005. And then they had a highly publicized relationship for a while.
I did not know that.
So it's like, he's pretty tiny and she's very tall.
Wow.
And they had a
I heard he finally got that watch wound though.
Well, he had a VH1 show, a dating show.
I didn't know that.
With girls, it was called, so what's his name? Flavor of Love is what it was called. God. And it was all these girls who were vying to be his girlfriend.
Oh, he must have loved that.
And then he met her. Okay, so I think it was after. And so then in 2008, she appeared on the reality show Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew. And in 2012, she won the German version of I'm a Celebrity, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And she's the only person in that show to have the viewers rank her number one throughout from the entire show.
Wow.
So she was always the person that people loved the most from the first episode on. Okay, which is something. I'm sure she had some great stories.
You know, the competition all got a sword through their chest, though.
You didn't win the show. Bye.
Chic red, Sonia.
Please and thank you.
Yeah, I had a thing for her. You know, I mean, I worked at the theater when Rocky IV came out, and
you did. We were little.
Yeah, I was little. That was one of my very first jobs. That's the one with James Brown, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he fights Apollo Creed.
Coming to America. Is that what it's called? No, yeah. Is it? No, it's not called Coming to America.
Welcome.
That was the Eddie Murphy movie.
Oh, boy. I watched Trading Places not that long ago.
Yeah.
Very questionable content.
Yeah, I'm going to have to think so.
I was like, wow, this is pretty. Anyhow, yeah, I had a thing for her. But then I was, for some reason, thinking about it the other day because I have a coworker at the bookstore who has just watched all the Rocky films in a row, including Creed, and is about to go see Creed 2.
Really?
And she was talking about it, and then I remembered.
I was going to ask.
Oh, yeah. I loved Dolph Lundgren's haircut in that movie, the spiky blonde haircut. And I wanted that haircut really bad, so I cut a picture out of him and taped it to my folder at my peachy at work.
Okay.
I mean, excuse me, at school. But then the other kids were like, why do you have a picture of a man with his shirt off? And on your, and I was like, and so I think that added to people not liking me in high school.
Tommy.
But I remember just walking up to them and saying, I must break you.
Yeah. I remember going to them. We went to church, and it was one of those things where it was like, I think there was a potluck after church that day. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where my friend's family said, oh, we're going to go see this movie. Do you want to come with us? And I was like, okay. And, you know, or my parents allowed me to. And I went. So it was one of those whirlwind days, right, where you're just going to go home and play and get out of your Sunday church clothes.
But and instead, go see a boxing movie.
But instead, you go to a boxing movie.
Russia versus the United States. So much has changed.
So much has changed. Mr. T. Wait, no, Mr. T's not in that one.
No, I don't know. They all blend in at this point.
No, that was three was Mr. T.
Yeah.
And they rhyme. Remember?
What was his name in that? B.A. Baracus.
Nope.
No. And he pitied the fool.
No, and you remember the movie, like Mr. T's movie that he did?
Yeah, I do.
Was it called
Car Wash 2, The Revenge.
It was very much like that. It wasn't called that, but
DC Cab.
DC Cab.
Yes. We remembered something off the top of our heads. Give me some of that.
Give me some of that. All right. DC Cab, bro. I'm going to look that up.
Not much to tell.
Yeah, but it was like, that was like Mr. T's like movie, and it was...
Co-starring Nancy Reagan as Mr. T.
I mean, dream role. Dream casting. So it starred Max Gale from Barney Miller, Adam Baldwin, who is still acting today, Mr. T, Gary Busey, and Marcia Warfield. Remember Marcia Warfield from Night Court?
Oh, yeah.
Roz?
Yeah.
Did you know? Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
We talked about Night Court in one of our past episodes.
So.
Good thing I remember some of that.
Yeah. Oh, God, DC Cab. Man, I remember that.
Yeah, I never saw it.
But his name. Ooh, you know.
It's all right.
I'm looking at a picture of Mr. T, and I became very enamored by it. I was like, look at that. Look at that. Look at that gold lame. Like, not a lot of people can pull that off.
I mean, not only that, but. That's several pounds of gold around his neck. You don't want to go falling off of a boat wearing that outfit.
I'm posting this picture, by the way. Everyone needs to know that because that's beautiful.
I used to hate it in the A-Team when he would cut his mohawk too short. I used to like it when it was spiky. You know, being into punk rock, I like a spiky mohawk. And his mohawk got cut really short several times. And I'd be like, oh, man, they should let it grow out and be spiky.
Your mohawk's too short, mister.
Mr. T. Come here, kid.
Did I completely interrupt your train of thought?
No, I interrupted yours.
No. Okay.
All right.
Were you done with that part?
All I was talking about was mohawks. I had a mohawk. I did get a mohawk at one point. And so it was probably about, it was right before the mod scene. It was when I was in the skate punk scene. Mostly I wore it flopped down in my face, like all the kids do now, right? I had it bleached and flopped down in my face, and it was all shaved and there on the back and the sides. But it was technically a mohawk. It could be spiked up into a mohawk. And so I did that, and one time I really did get the cojones to go to school with my mohawk spiked.
You did?
And I got my Aquanet, and I held it up, and I stood with my head upside down in the blow dryer so that my mohawk was spiked. It was spiked, and it was looking good, and I went to school, and I got raw eggs thrown at me. And I got threatened. I got my life threatened. And then one guy named Bill, who also had a mohawk, who spiked his mohawk, waited outside of the classroom, looked through the window, and pointed at me and mouthed the words, "I'm going to kill you." And he and his friend waited for me to leave class. And then they followed me and threatened my life because I spiked my hair into a mohawk, even though he had a mohawk himself. He threatened my life. And then he used to live up the street, up a different road from us, but in the same kind of region of the Santa Cruz Mountains there, but off a different road. And I remember one time they drove past in a white pickup truck and saw me, and they stopped the car. And I was like, oh, fuck. And he's like, "Are you walking home?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Get in." I was like, all right. So I got into the back of the pickup, and he was totally cool and totally normal.
Oh, great.
And I was all, what happened? I've been scared of you. I thought you were going to, like, kill me and murder me and slash my throat because I had a mohawk. He's like, no. He was totally cool, totally chill.
Great.
Yeah, whatever.
Punks, huh?
Yeah, what the fuck's up with those guys, man? They don't give a fuck about nothing.
You got anything else?
No, that was it. Just a random train of thought, bringing all the way back to the beginning.
Let's think about the beginning. Lovely. All right, well, should we wrap this up?
Where are we at?
We're at an hour and four.
Yeah, I mean, I say that's pretty good for throwing a grab bag together at the last minute.
Last week we were like 95 minutes, so we're just kind of averaging.
Well, we were going to go see Ghostbusters last night.
Yeah.
And I haven't been feeling very good, and I wasn't really up to it, and so I stayed home and I watched Noir instead. I watched The Big Clock with Ray Milland, which is a very, very suspenseful film, by the way. It has nothing to do with the 80s. We're going to do a flashback episode. The 40s!
Is that 40s?
Wow.
All right. We're going to sneeze you guys later.
Yeah. I need to eat.
Yeah.
I need to eat. That's what my matter is.
I think so, too. Please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks, everyone, for listening and for interacting. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Stay rad.
Stay awesome.
Bye.